Welcome to the Education Spotlight with Mike O'Sullivan, CEO of One South Coast Chamber. Presented by Bay Coast Bank, providing exceptional service and solutions for our community. And One South Coast Chamber, right here on FM 95.9, AM 1480 WSAR.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Katie Green, Vice President of Marketing and Events for One South Coast Chamber, and this is the Education Spotlight sponsored by Bay Coast Bank. I'm filling in for our CEO, Mike O'Sullivan, today, and I'm joined by Sarah Rose, Chief Impact Officer at the United Way of Greater New Bedford. Hi, Sarah. Welcome.
Hi, Katie. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us today on this Friday afternoon. So you're part of the One South Coast Education Committee, but before we get into all things education, why don't you give our listeners a little bit of background on the United Way and what it is that you do?
Thanks so much. So the United Way of Greater New Bedford is located on Union Street in downtown New Bedford. And we, like many other United Ways, provide funding throughout the community, investment in our four focus areas, educational opportunity, economic mobility, health access, and family resilience. We do that in a variety of ways. One, which we're going to talk a little bit about today, is through our grant-making program, making investments in the community. But our United Way is a little unique in that we also offer programs through our Family Resource and Development Center, which is a state contract with the Department of Children and Families, as well as our New Bedford Community Connections Coalition, which is also a child welfare effort. And we also work with PATCH, which is a British word which means neighborhood, and they're DCF workers that are actually Department of Children and Family workers that are actually embedded at the United Way, and they're working in neighborhoods to help families, struggling families, be able to raise their children effectively.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really neat work.
Awesome. So there was a recent research study done on the South Coast about early education and care status. We were talking about it just before we came on the air, so we didn't get too much into it. So let's get into that now. What can you tell us about that study?
Yeah, and actually the last time I joined the Education Spotlight, I came on to talk about this research. The name of the research paper is called Expanding Early Education and Care Opportunities. It was published in March of 22. I worked with Evan Horowitz, who's at the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University. He's the executive director there. And it's a deep data dive looking at early education and care here on the South Coast to better understand what's happening statewide, but then also diving down to see, you know, how we reflect what's going on in the state and how the South Coast is actually different. That research paper, if you're interested in reading the whole thing, actually is on the South Coast Community Foundation's website under the Learn tab.
Awesome. Yeah, South Coast Community Foundation is also good friends of us at the Chamber as well. So the Commonwealth is recognizing that there is a crisis and they're making a significant investment in the community. What does that look like for Governor Healey? What does she have going on in terms of early education and this care proposal?
Sure. I mean, this dovetails very, you know, closely to sort of the work that was done in that research finding. The Healey administration is really looking at the crisis in the Commonwealth and wanting to make sure that early childhood education and care is equitably available to all families. Mm-hmm. So in the proposed budget for fiscal year 25, there's actually $1.5 billion of money being allocated to the state, to early education and care across the state. And that has just been moved out of the Education Committee, so I think people are optimistic that that will actually move forward. If I can just go back for a few minutes to just talk a little bit about what's in the research findings,
Absolutely.
Because I think that helps shape what we're hoping for with the administration's new money that's coming into the system. Some of the findings from the research report look at that not everyone has access to early childhood education mm-hmm. and care. This is something that the Healy administration is really picking up on. And that for many families, the costs are really high. And for some families, they're just too high. And of course, there's this huge issue around recruiting and retaining teachers.
Right.
The teachers are being paid low salaries, and they have a highly demanding job. And that the quality to care is not equitable. It's not across the whole system, and it's really hard to measure.
Mm-hmm.
What we do know is that wealthy families seem to be able to find high quality care, and that's not necessarily afforded to everyone. So it's really a system of scarcity. There isn't enough spots, there aren't enough centers, there are not enough workers. Mm-hmm. Here on the South Coast, for every child care spot, seat, there are 2.5 children waiting for those seats,
wow.
where statewide there are 2 children. So there is more demand within the South Coast and not enough seats. And we know that access to early childhood education and care here on the South Coast is really dependent on income levels, on parental age, on people's race. And of course, within the community of teachers, people who are working with the providers, mm-hmm. that it really is a huge gender imbalance. Across the state, it's more than 90% of the educators in early childhood education and care are women.
Mm.
A little less here on the South Coast, but still a huge gender imbalance. And then that pay piece of it, the average salary for educators here on the South Coast, $26,000 a year, as compared to $33,000 across the state. Still, in comparison to the average salary of all workers across the state, these are really low, but we're even lower,
right?
At 26,000. The report also points to some of the things that can be happening to help improve early childhood education and care here on the South Coast. Things like wraparound services, so helping providers think about nutritional food. A big topic is mental health. Transportation to and from, diaper banks, all sorts of things that we could be thinking about for wraparound services. And then also improving the workforce pipeline. So what are some of the things we can put in place to help people learn how to be early childhood educators? So it could be working with Bristol Community College, working with UMass Dartmouth, working with local vocational schools to help understand and educate people to be trained and available, because there's a huge scarcity of educators. And finally is to support some pilot programs that could go along to help with innovation around how this sector is working.
Sure. You know, it's interesting that you say that there's this gender equality still happening. My parents are both retired educators, and when they graduated from school in the 70s, my dad was a special needs teacher, and he was hired right away because there was such a shortage of male teachers. And my mom was unable to find a teaching job, and she didn't get into education for many years after she had graduated, because it was so hard for the women to find jobs at the time. So it's interesting that here we are all 50-ish years later,
yeah.
and we're still having to deal with these same issues. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really a completely female-dominated industry. And, you know, people might think, well, why is that important? You know, it's really important, I think, particularly for boys to have male role models. And so having more men in their lives as far as being an educator or an administrator is really important, not only for pre-K, but, you know, throughout their schooling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we thank them, because we know what a difficult job it is to be in education. It's oftentimes a thankless
yes,
job.
Yes, exactly. And, thank yeah. you to your parents.
That's right. Yes, yes. So what is the United Way's interest in the early education and care? We'll talk a little bit about that.
Sure.
Briefly.
So the United Way, we've been investing on the South Coast for 70 years, since 1953, way back when, and really thinking about mobilizing resources to strengthen our community. And through our work and work with similar organizations, we certainly know that access to early education and care, high quality, affordable access, really allows parents to be able to reliably work. Mm-hmm. And so for the United Way, we think of this really as being an anti-poverty effort for economic mobility, for families to be able to have generational wealth because they know that their kids are being well provided for. They're not having to compromise anything with their child's care, mm-hmm. and they can be out in the workforce working. And certainly, if we've learned anything from the pandemic, it was the devastating effects of not having access to places to bring your children,
right.
and people left the workforce in droves. And that really affected families. Mm-hmm. It affected the community, and it certainly affected the children. I mean, even last year, 60,000 people reported changing jobs due to difficulties with their daycare provider. So we know that this is an important thing, and the United Way really wants to invest to help families be able to be sure that they have access to this care. Because we know that it's important in lifting the region.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, Sarah, and then when we come back, we'll pick right up. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Education Spotlight with Mike O'Sullivan, CEO of One South Coast Chamber. Presented by Bay Coast Bank, providing exceptional service and solutions for our community. And One South Coast Chamber.
Welcome back to the Education Spotlight, sponsored by Bay Coast Bank. I'm Katie Green from One South Coast Chamber, and today I'm joined by Sarah Rose, the Chief Impact Officer at the United Way of Greater New Bedford. So, Sarah, just before the break, we were talking about how there's substantial gaps in the availability, quality, and affordability of the early childhood education, and as well as a shortage of educators. But the United Way is working on something really exciting. To help with that, I think, right?
Thanks, Katie.
Yeah, so yeah. Tell us more.
Really appreciate the opportunity to talk about our innovation challenge. The United Way offered an innovation challenge in 2017, and we had really exciting applicants from across our region. And the Innovation Challenge was grants of up to $100,000, and applicants could apply for 1 to 3 years of funding. And at the time, there were three grants awarded. One went to the Women's Center, one went to Greater New Bedford Youth Alliance, and one went to the Greater New Bedford Health Center. And those grants were going to be offered again in 2020, and the United Way had an info session in February of 2020, and needless to say, just a couple of minutes later, the money went in other directions.
Yeah.
So this is our first time offering it since 2017.
Wow.
So what we know, and the reason that we think these innovation challenges are really important, is that our leaders of organizations in our region are really busy working on those day-to-day operations, making sure that their organizations are the best they can possibly be, running on tight budgets and being able to do, you know, incredible work as social servants. And because of that, it really doesn't give them that time and opportunity and the resources to kind of step back and say, if I had a few minutes, what could I do to make this different and more effective, more efficient, more collaborative, more sustainable, all these things that I think, you know, nonprofit leaders and other leaders think someday we'll get to that. So the Innovation Challenge is really meant to allow leaders, nonprofit and for-profit leaders, to think in new and different ways. The increase in the state funding for early childhood education and care, which is what we're talking about today, you know, is going to allow for some operational efficiencies, and it's going to allow local organizations maybe afford some time and you know, effort to do other things. At the same time, this is probably a great opportunity for private philanthropy to side by side with some of that state funding, mm-hmm. be able to leverage it and invest in new and interesting ways. So the innovation challenge this time is looking at early education and care and its link to economic mobility, something we talked about a little bit earlier. And what we're hoping is that this will give an opportunity for these local leaders to be able to think about new systems, to be able to pilot ideas, and to be able to make changes that they can implement sort of in their own organization or across the sector, or maybe even some cross-sector collaborations. So the innovation challenge this time will be specifically looking at early education and care and how it helps with economic mobility. It will be grants of up to $100,000 per organization. But if you're a collaborative project, you can actually apply for up to $175,000.
Wow.
Projects can be 1, 2, or 3 years. We want to make sure that we're throwing the net pretty wide on it. And it's really unrestricted in that it can be for capital, it can be for a new project, it can be for a range of things. The only criteria is that we want new projects, not existing projects that you're trying to expand, mm-hmm. or a project that's having a cash shortfall and you're trying to shore it up and improve it. It needs to be a new concept.
Okay. Now, is there a limit as to how many businesses are going to be able to receive this grant?
Yeah. So initially, we're opening an RFP looking for letters of interest. So
okay.
on February 26th, if you go on to the website, you'll see there will be a application, and the application will just really be a letter of interest.
Okay.
We will collect them in an innovator panel, which is a group of citizens who have agreed to read these applications. We'll read them, and we will decide who will move forward. So the applicants that are selected will then be asked to fill out a full application. We'll have an interview over the summer, and we'll announce winners in September.
Awesome. Exciting for these businesses, this great opportunity.
Right. It is businesses. It can be nonprofits. Mm-hmm. It can be government agencies. So there's really not a restriction on the type of organization that can apply. But again, we really encourage collaborative projects.
Sure. Now, that's a lot of money that you're going to be giving out. So how does the United Way get their money to do things like this?
Yeah, thanks so much for asking that, because that's really an important question. We are so grateful to our donors and to our workplace campaigns. Most nonprofit organizations raise a lot of money through private philanthropy, people who believe in the organization and give money. The United Way is a little bit different in that we also have something called workplace campaigns, and they're employers throughout our region who offer their employees an opportunity to give money to the United Way, and that is through payroll deductions.
Oh.
So employees can give as little as, say, $5 to $10 a month. But all of that adds up to being enough money to support these kinds of efforts where we're putting money back into the community to help improve life for people living in our region.
That's
so we're
amazing.
So grateful to all of the people who understand this work to be really important.
That's amazing. So the Innovation Challenge, what makes this innovative?
Yeah. So, the United Way really defines innovation as sort of a novel approach to make a system more effective, more efficient, more collaborative, or more sustainable than the current approaches and solutions. So it can be programs, it can be services, it can be other types of projects that can result in breakthroughs for people who are living in the greater New Bedford area.
So just to backtrack for a quick minute, organizations and projects that are eligible, nonprofits, public entities, which include schools, hospitals, government, right?
Yep.
And then for-profits, but they have to have a social mission, correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
And then collaborative projects, like you said, are encouraged.
Yeah.
And then people or organizations that are not eligible for funding, political?
Right. Yep. Religious, mm-hmm. sort of those usual ones. we will have information. In fact, it's already on our website. So if you're wondering if you if your project will work, just head to our website.
And what's that website?
Sure, thanks. It's unitedwayofgnb.org.
Okay, awesome. And then, like you said, the request for letters of interest will launch on February 26th of this year, and the deadline closes on April 12th, correct?
On April 12th. Okay. So that would be for the letter of interest. If you're listening to this show and you're interested in learning more, we will have an information session on Friday, February 16th at Fort Tabor at the Community Center. And you can register for that info session at our website. And again, that's unitedwayofgnb.org. And that session will be next Friday at 10 a.m.
Awesome. Awesome. Lots of exciting things happening with this innovation challenge.
Yeah, we're really excited. It's an important space within our community. There are a lot of really great people who are involved in providing services throughout our region. Mm-hmm. And so we're really looking forward to working with them and finding some neat ways to improve what we're doing.
Awesome. All right, we're going to take another quick break and we'll be back shortly.
Welcome back to the Education Spotlight with Mike O'Sullivan, CEO of One South Coast Chamber. Presented by Bay Coast Bank, providing exceptional service and solutions for our community. And One South Coast Chamber.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to the Education Spotlight, sponsored by Bay Coast Bank. I'm Katie Green from One South Coast Chamber. And again, I'm joined today by Sarah Rose, the Chief Impact Officer at the United Way of Greater New Bedford. All right, Sarah, so right before the break, we were talking about the amazing innovation challenge that the United Way of Greater New Bedford is currently working on. Aside from that project, what are some innovative projects from outside the region that have been happening that you can tell us about?
Yeah, thanks, Katie. You know, so often communities kind of look at one another and say, gee, what should we be doing? And sometimes it's really helpful just to have a look at some other communities and see, you know, what's going on there. So over the last couple of weeks, I've tried to reach out to other communities to kind of hear about their efforts. And have seen some really neat projects. Several are capacity building projects, and I can tell you about one of them, although I looked at four or five of them. There's something called the Child Care Entrepreneur Steward Training Program. It's in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. And the idea is that to increase culturally competent family child care programs, it's sort of a train the trainer model. So just as a gross example, one person is trained in family child care, so that would be in-house child care, and that person trains five people to open up child care facilities in their homes. Mm-hmm. You know, people who have home child care often are people who love children, who understand little ones, yeah, and have a passion for education. They're not necessarily also people who have a strong background in how to run a business.
Sure.
So they have to pay taxes, and they may have another employee, and it really is a small business. So the trainer helps those, and you need to have a license, right? There's all sorts of things. So the trainer helps, in my example, those five family child carers get all of that administrative work in place, as well as all the other things you need, mm-hmm, right, to have children in your home. And let's just say that each of those five then invite five children to be in their family child care. And by the way, I don't even know how many kids you can have if you have a home daycare, but but let's just say in my example.
Sure.
So now 25 children are being provided for because one person knew how to help people open up those family child care. So
amazing.
Really neat, right? Like that's, yeah, a great innovative project because it has like exponential growth to be able to grow capacity within this sector. So that was one project. And honestly, we saw that in several different communities, which was really neat. Another one is called the Mayor's Scholarship Fund, and it's in Lawrence, Massachusetts. It actually started during the pandemic. It was instituted in 2020, and it's a state child care subsidy for families who are not able to afford early education and care, and it allows them to be at an affordable, licensed, subsidized childcare facility. You know, when you think about it, we have so many scholarship funds for kids going off to college, mm-hmm. right? There's oodles of them, and this time of the year, right, everyone's offering college scholarship funds. But we really don't have that same mechanism for families who maybe don't qualify for vouchers, but really do need help, you know, because they have multiple kids who are now in preschool programs. And actually, the research that I referenced earlier, what was found was that for families that are, you know, making below $40,000, they're less likely to use early childhood education and care facilities. Mm. For families making $40,000 to $60,000, they're most likely to have their kids in preschool. And for families that make just over 60, they're again less likely. And it's because it's so expensive for those families who just are falling outside of the voucher right. system. So the Mayor's Scholarship Fund in Lawrence is really trying to shore up those families that otherwise may not be able to afford childcare for their kids. And then the final one is actually in New Haven, Connecticut, and they were really searching for a solution to help raise teacher compensation, but they didn't want to burden families with increased tuition. So it's called the Friends Center, and it, as I said, it's in New Haven, Connecticut, and they developed this really unique and collaborative approach to meet teachers' highest expense, which of course is housing. In January of 21, they launched something called the Teachers Housing Initiative, and it offers eligible teachers free housing. So what they literally did was they bought a house across the street from the center, and daycare providers, the teachers, live in the house. They mm-hmm. have children, they have dogs and cats. They all live as a community.
Yeah.
And then they work across the street at the local provider center. So it gives them a community of people who are working together, which is really neat. And it helps increase their salaries because they aren't paying for room and board. Right. That's being provided through the center. It's kind of like the boarding school model yeah. for high schools, mm-hmm. where a lot of times faculty will live right on campus. It's sort of that model in some ways, in that the teachers are on campus and available, and also getting a pretty good pay bump because they're not having to pay for their housing.
Right, which is that's a huge savings. In
huge
and of
savings.
Itself.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. We've also looked at other projects where cities will hire a fellow, and it's somebody who's hired to sort of morning, noon, and night, wake up thinking about early education and care and go to bed thinking about early education and care. And that person over a 2 to 3 year period makes recommendations about what they think can help sort of move things forward. So it could be, you know, a research-based project where a community is saying, we really want to sort of study this and get to know what the issues are and then look at viable solutions, and hiring somebody sort of to just do that work. So all sorts of neat projects going on outside our community that seem really innovative mm-hmm. and could be examples. The United Way never wants to suggest that any one project is the way to go. These are just examples. And so we encourage people who are on the ground and know this work, you know, much better than we do yeah. to shape the projects how they see fit. But we thought it would be helpful just to kind of get the juices flowing by the creative juices flowing by showing some projects from outside of our region.
Well, I think that's really important. You know, I've worked in marketing for longer than I care to admit at this point in my life, but I've always found that it's great to reach out to other people in the industry for fresh ideas and just to kind of get inspired by what other people are doing. Yeah. Not necessarily copying, but just getting that inspiration and helping spark new ideas for us and the projects that we have going on in our lives here on the South Coast. So
yeah, I mean, I always say, I think I feel comfortable being a fast follower. You know, there are leaders, people who are sort of out, you know, blazing the trail.
Yeah.
But in some ways, being a fast follower can be great because you can look at what they're doing and then sort of tweak it to make it your own. And, you know, imitation is, you know, the greatest form of flattery,
absolutely.
Whatever it is.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
So, Sarah, why don't you tell us a little bit about the application process and how the grant scoring works for this?
Sure. We talked a little bit about the innovator panel. So I think I mentioned the United Way. We staffers don't make the decisions about grants. We check the grants to make sure that all the material's there and that the criteria are being met. And then we use a citizens review committee. And for the innovator challenge, we're going to have a special review committee, which we're calling the innovator panel. And that's made up of early education and care experts. It's made up of people from statewide coalitions, local funders, other area organizations like the local hospital, and that group of, you know, 5 to 7 people will be the people who are actually reading the letters of interest and deciding sort of what projects are going to move forward for the full application. I think we talked a little bit about the application process, mm-hmm. which when the full application, there'll be a section about who you are, there'll be a section about your project, there'll be a section about how you measure your outcomes, you know, how it's sustainable, what are the risks, how do you mitigate them? And then there would be a section about sort of how you think this is going to help to make changes. So that would be the total application. But the scoring of it is probably a part that will be on our website. We have a rubrics that the panelists will use to decide on the grants. It's sort of based out of 100, and they'll go through and score it. And some of the things they'll be looking at is the potential for social impact, how compelling and innovative and inventive our approach is to the project, the understanding the risk and mitigating those risks, the experience and the track record of the organization, and the staff taking on the project, and things like that.
Awesome. Now, one more time for people who might have tuned in late. What is the website that people can go to find this information?
Thanks. It's unitedwayofgnb.org.
Okay.
And I'll just mention again that if this is intriguing to you and you'd like to hear more, we are having an information session. We'll all have, you know, a PowerPoint slide and a lot of information next Friday, February 16th at 10 a.m. at the Fort Tabor Community Center, and that's in New Bedford at Fort Tabor.
Awesome. Awesome. Fort Tabor is a great place. That's a really fun place to host this event.
Leave time and go for a walk after the...
Hopefully. I heard we're going to have really great weather this weekend, so we'll keep our fingers crossed that it follows through to next weekend, and then people can get some nice outdoor time.
Terrific. And, you know, as I mentioned, like, collaborative projects can actually apply for a lot more money. So if you meet someone at the information session that you think might have some synergy with what you're hoping to do, you can take a walk and talk about it afterwards.
Right. Well, at the Chamber, we're all about networking. That's one of our big things. So this would be a great networking opportunity for these people. Yeah.
Right. And if you don't have an idea in mind, but you're intrigued and curious, the information session would be a place to maybe meet other people, hear about their ideas. And that's why we've left a pretty long window from the 26th, when we'll start accepting the letters, to April, so that people can really think about what they'd like to do, who they could collaborate with, and really start forming those project ideas. And I should say, Katie, that anyone who would want to talk to me, they're more than welcome to call me at the United Way, and I'd love to hear about their project ideas and help them think about ways they can improve them.
Excellent. Thanks, Sarah. We talked about the deadlines before, but let's just go over those deadlines for that whole process again.
Sure. So the info session is next Friday, the 16th at 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then the letters of interest will open on the 26th. So you'll go onto our website, you go under our investment, you'll see Innovation Challenge, and there there'll be a link to the portal where the letters need to be inputted.
Okay.
The letters are open until April 12th, so you have a long time to be creative and get those innovative juices flowing.
But don't procrastinate. Don't be a last minute person.
Leave it to last minute. Yeah, we never do that.
No.
Then we're going to notify finalists by May 24th.
Mm-hmm.
So the panelists will read those letters and decide which projects are going to move forward. The panelists will then have about a month to put their full application in. And then in July and August, we'll interview those finalists. We'll get to know their projects a little bit more. And the week of the 16th of September, we'll notify. And we're going to have an awards presentation on the 27th of September. So a pretty long timeline, but we're hoping that allows people adequate time to make their projects terrific.
Any plans on where you'll be hosting the awards presentation?
No. Do you have any suggestions?
Oh, we'll have to talk offline because I'll have a ton of suggestions. Assuming somewhere in New Bedford, right?
Well, certainly in our region.
Sure.
So
sure.
The United Way of Greater New Bedford is Wareham to Dartmouth and up to Freetown.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take our last quick break and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Education Spotlight with Mike O'Sullivan, CEO of One South Coast Chamber. Presented by Bay Coast Bank, providing exceptional service and solutions for our community. And One South Coast Chamber.
Welcome back, everyone. This is the Education Spotlight, sponsored by Bay Coast Bank. And I am Katie Green from One South Coast Chamber, filling in for our CEO, Mike O'Sullivan. And today, again, I am joined by Sarah Rose, the Chief Impact Officer at the United Way of Greater New Bedford. Sarah, thanks so much for being here today. We've covered a lot, haven't we?
Thank you for having me. Yeah,
but
we have.
We still have a little bit more before we wrap up for the day. So, right before we went to break, we were talking about the grants that are going to be available through the United Way of Greater New Bedford. What are some of the other grants that are available?
Yeah, thank you. This is sort of our busy season. So we do have quite a bit available, and luckily they kind of work for a lot of different populations. So let me just tell you a little bit about some of them. Currently open, so if you went to our website today, unitedwayofgmb.org, you would see something called Together United. Mm-hmm. And these are grants for nonprofit organizations for work with staff and board on diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. The United Way believes really strongly in racial equity and social justice. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that our nonprofit partners have access to resources to help do that work within their organizations. And we really believe that it's important to kind of do the work at home so you can do the work in the community. So they're grants of up to $5,000. And again, they're for training, for professional development, getting in a speaker, going to a conference, buying materials, whatever you want to do around diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives within your organization. So those are currently open, and they close later this month. So if you're interested in that, I would suggest going to our website today.
Don't procrastinate. Once again, that's the lesson of the day. No procrastinating when it comes to grants. Well, because grants are a lot of work to fill out for good reason.
Yeah.
So I think if anybody has never filled out I actually just had to do a mini grant application a couple of days ago, and it's a lot of work, even though, you know, it might not look like a long application. So we definitely want to stress, do not wait to fill out these grant applications.
That is really good advice, Katie. I know we've all probably been guilty of that last minute, but if you take a couple extra minutes and allow it to kind of bake for a few days, the grant requests are always better. So
yes,
that's really good advice. Another grant that's coming up in next week. So there's info sessions on this grant on Monday the 12th at 4:00 and Tuesday the 13th at 6:00. It's called the Changemaker Grant, and it's actually meant for volunteer groups of three or more who are looking to do good work in the community. Mm-hmm. So the Changemaker Grant is really unique. We're the only United Way who offers one.
Wow.
And it's really the only access for grants for volunteer organizations. So your organization has to have three or more people involved.
Okay.
It has to be an all-volunteer organization. And your annual revenue, so the amount that your group takes in, needs to be less than $40,000 a year. But if you meet those criteria, if that sounds like you, up to $2,500. And that is for a project. If you see a need in your community and you want to address it, this would be a great grant. So some examples of that is like Operation Clean Sweep has been a Changemaker grant recipient. They are an anti-litter campaign. They clean beaches and streets and parks and all sorts of stuff. Waltz Mobile Closet. It's a group that provides, like, literally mobile, so it brings racks and tables into community centers and shelters and public spaces.
Wow, yeah.
And it has available clothing and shoes and toiletries for families that need it. They are a Changemaker grant. Last year, we funded the New Bedford Rowing Center.
Mm-hmm.
They had bought a dragon boat, which the Greater New Bedford Regional Vocational Technical High School.
You got it. I think you got it.
They have restored it.
Yeah.
And they applied for a Changemaker grant to pay for the life jackets so that people can be on the water safely.
Wow.
So all sorts of, you know, interesting projects that that the Changemaker grants have supported. It has been in existence since 1995. It was once called, I believe it was called, like, the Community Builders Mini Grant.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years ago, we changed it to Changemaker because we felt like that was more appropriate. Those grants have been around for a long time. Over $1 million has been awarded. And I really encourage you, if you are thinking about something in your community at a grassroots level that you're wanting to change and you think you can make your community better, have a look at those Changemaker grants. Again, the info sessions on those are Monday at 4, Tuesday at 6, and they open on Wednesday, which must be the 14th.
Yeah, Valentine's Day.
It opens. So there's info sessions if you go onto our website, unitedwayofgmb.org, and you go on to the Our Investment tab,
mm-hmm.
you'll see Changemaker Grants, and there you can register for the info session. And once you've registered, we'll send you a link. It's actually a Zoom call. So you can get right onto the Zoom call and hear about the Changemaker grants.
So there's it sounds, you know, based on our conversation today, there's so many amazing opportunities available for organizations on the South Coast.
Absolutely. And then coming up in March, our sort of Goliath of grants is our community impact grants.
Mm-hmm.
They're grants up to $25,000. Last year, we granted, I think, 26 of those grants. And they're sort of the bread and butter grants of the United Way. They're a competitive grant. They're working with nonprofit organizations to help with their work. So that's coming up in March. So you won't see it on our website, although you can look on our website to get more information about community impact grants, and then we'll open that in March. So lots going on between all of these different grant rounds that we currently have available. And again, we're so grateful to our partners, donors, volunteers, and for the people who participate in corporate campaigns and do payroll deductions at every paycheck to support the United Way and our investments in the community.
That's amazing, Sarah. And for the fundraising efforts that you do, for anybody who's interested in maybe attending one of the United Way of Greater New Bedford's fundraising events, where can they find more information on that?
Yeah, again, on our website, unitedwayofgmb.org. And coming up in April, we have one of my personal favorite events, which is called Power of the Purse.
Yes.
And it's a wonderful event through Women United, which mm-hmm. is an effort of the United Way of Greater New Bedford. And it's a really fun party. And I encourage everyone to go to our website and have a look. Katie, you've been there, haven't you?
I actually haven't. You want to know why? Every year when you have that event, there's usually a chamber event happening the same night. And I'm in charge of events for the chamber. So I always miss it. But I see the pictures and it looks amazing. And every year it looks like it just gains more and more traction. Traction. So I have to check the date on that. I'm going to go on your
April
website.
26, April 26th, I believe.
Okay. I don't think, you want to know, it's a Thursday, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I have an event that night. So we have to work together next year and not do that.
We'll drag you there.
Oh.
We'll drag you there.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap up for today. Sarah Rose, Chief Impact Officer at United Way of Greater New Bedford. Thanks for joining us today.
Katie, thank you so much for having me. It's really nice to see you.
You too. I'm Katie Green, Vice President of Marketing and Events for One South Coast Chamber. And this is the Education Spotlight sponsored by Bay Coast Bank. Thanks for joining us.